All right, welcome back. Hour number three. There are a lot of weird angles about this. Obviously, very carefully planned, and the best laid plans of mice, men, and Democrats often go awry. This one didn't work with Trump. And there are still things we're finding out more and more. We found out today, you can news, you'll see it. Congressman said that the entire crook's house was visited by a cleaning crew, shall we say, and that everything was cleaned up. All cleaned up. Nothing left. No silverware, no trash to go through. They cleaned a federal crime scene. Then I've got the picture up there, you'll see it, of the FBI pressure washing, or they got a huge hose up there, hosing down the roof on the building Crooks was on to get rid of all evidence. There's no other reason. They picked up the brass and they hosed the whole roof off. This is so painfully obvious what's going on now that I don't know how anybody could miss it. Inside job all the way. And this had Trump been lost in that assassination attempt, had he been taken out, Biden would not have, if he did, and I'm not convinced it was him, Biden would still be in the race. I think his ego was there. Remember, the letter that was published was not on White House stationery, and his signature did not match up. So I think this was a coup. And they kept him in the basement, and they told him this is how it's going to be. And that was that. Now they're trying to market the camel as being something that she could never be, competent. It's the same old game. And that Reuters, if you've ever had any doubts about Reuters, let them forever be put to sleep. Reuters, the worst. Kamala Harris, Ho Harris, is in front of Trump, 44-42. Uh-huh, right. But the real tragedy is they're going to do whatever they want to do. They will do whatever they want to do. We've certainly learned that lesson. Gary Holland is back with us tonight to talk about this and other things as well. Hello, Gary. Welcome back. We got through this one pretty quickly, unlike the Las Vegas massacre, which we did get through very quickly considering the size of it, the duality of it. I mean, the real agenda was not to kill those people. They were a cover-up. That's the way it looks. At any rate, welcome back, and what do you have on your table here?
Hey, how's it going this evening, Jeff?
All right. Thank you.
And if you remember, too, with Las Vegas, there was new. Basically, every time they had a news conference until they ended them, they had a new story, a new lie. They changed stories from the they're having daily press conferences. And right. If you remember, our now fearless governor Lombardo was looking not like a nervous rat on a sinking ship.
Oh, he was so nervous. And who was standing right behind him in the suit? An FBI agent right behind him.
Breathing down his neck. And then he would tell one story one day. Then the next day, stories would change. Then you would get stories from this one, and then that story would change. And then as time went on, then all of a sudden you started hearing about people who survived the incident, who had witnessed certain things, started dying mysteriously. Cars crashing in the, you know, light fences and bursting into flames, and you know, obviously using thermite, but they were letting the, you know, having vehicles burn for 8 hours straight.
Cars burned for hour after hour, and the police couldn't put them out. The fire couldn't put them out. Nope. Cops were there right away. Called in the fire department. Never seen anything like it. This is a big Mercedes too, so yeah, they got rid of a lot
of key
people.
And then that one poor girl. Boyfriend goes to work and then comes home. She's just a young girl, just magically just dead in her bed or whatever it was. And poor guy out in Pahrump and had witnessed certain things. And he got hit by a car in the most weirdest way. He got flung out into like the desert from being hit by a car. And I don't think they never found the car, by the way. It was just like they found him dead, but hit by a car. And then it was that mysterious death where poor guy was over in North Las Vegas, and in the middle of the night, someone shoots him dead in an empty abandoned house, and never gave an explanation why he was there.
No.
And we can just keep going on and on and on. This seems to be, I've noticed, Jeff, have you noticed also that these type of events now, they're being wrapped up a lot faster. You're given like in a nice, neat package, the shooter,
definitely
the narratives.
Fast.
Yep.
You got it.
Yep. Everything's all set up, and you get, you know, you have, well, here's why he did it. Here's this. And, you know, of course, it takes them at least a few days to build it, you know, do some scrubbing. They scour, you have AI scour the internet now. And that's why I'm starting to believe, Jeff, a lot of these events that happened now in the last, especially the last couple of years, if you notice how these, the stories get straight, tightened up really fast. There's Facebook pages built for them and all these different things. And it's done super quick now, which proves that they're probably not using human assets to do this anymore. It's also all AI. So now they just have like a program, an AI program. They plug in Thomas Crooks, create a whole life for this guy. AI takes over. A few days later, you know, you get your truth within the first 24 to 48 hours about the person. Then all the stories change. And now I read something today, Jeff. I don't know. I came across something, and there's so many articles now. I usually will not forward them to you because it's just low quality propaganda. But there's one that said there's witness who lived next door said there was a lot of evil going on in Thomas Crooks's house.
Evil? That was evil? Such as?
That's what a neighbor says. There was nothing but just pure evil going on in Thomas Crooks's house when
really?
They were there, than his neighbor. Yeah, but what does that mean? I mean, I live next door, and there was a lot of evil going on. But when you hear the first initial stories about him, it's like, I can't believe he did it. That's not the guy that I knew. And, you know, that, it goes from, that's not the guy I knew. That's the, he's a nerdy, you know, video game gamer, basically, that, you know, kind of flat, you know, a little bit of a slacker in school. Really didn't bother. He was a nice guy, quiet kid that just liked to play video games. Went from that guy to now he's like an international man of mystery. But see, the problem is for the American people, not the people in this audience, obviously. We're talking the general American public who's, you know, doing whatever they're doing, drinking their beer, snorting their cocaine, watching a video, you know, watching TikTok videos, watching sports, whatever they're doing. They have the attention span of a goldfish, or even less than a goldfish. So a story that's told a week ago and a new story is told today, they're just going to go with what the story is being told today because they don't remember what was said a week ago. See, they know that the majority, see, they don't have to try to convince the Jeff Rentz audience, right, Jeff? Because they know they're never going to pull a fast one on the audience, in this audience.
Right.
There's no way. But that they already know that. So they're not going to even try. What they have to, the percentage of the population they concentrate on is the 85 to 90% of the American population that are just straight morons. And they are. They're highly uninformed, and they don't know what's going on.
No, like you said,
a lot of times, you know, they're caught up in their jobs. They're worried. They have stacks of overdue bills. Life is just, in this country, for them, it's crushing. And it's like they're at the point where they're at wit's end, and they just really don't want it. They just want to tune, you know, just drop out.
It's true.
So their brains are so confused and so overwhelmed with just everyday life that it's just they look at a quick snippet on their news feed from their smartphone, whatever the communists and the Zionists want them to learn and want to know, little quick 10-second, you know, either a video or like a text, and they look at it real fast, you know, and they say Kamala Harris is the greatest. Okay, she must be. That's as far as it goes with them. Or Thomas Crooks was a evil villain that, you know, had international accounts everywhere. So, oh, he was a terrorist. Then that was it. That's now what they believe. And that's it. They don't go any farther than that. And it's on to how am I going to pay my next month's rent? How's this? And
well, their when the credit cards are maxed out, where are they going to go, Gary? Where are they going to go?
I hate to say they're going to be in the streets. That's where they're going to go. Because where else are they going to? You know, Ray, at this point, Jeff, I've seen people, a guy today, for instance. He was in the store buying a pack of cigarettes. It was a local convenience store here. His daughter was with him, of course, staring at her smartphone and scrolling through, like lost in space. But he's there at the cash register. He bought a pack. He's trying to buy a pack of cigarettes and two drinks, and it looked like some type of, like, you know, store sandwich they have prepackaged.
Right.
He reaches in, tries one debit card, denied. He goes, oh, it must be this one. He went through six different cards. All of them got denied. Then he's reaching in his pockets, Jeff, pulling out a handful of coins. And he's literally paying with the coins. That right now is the $70,000 a year and under American. That's the situation they are in right now.
Trying to maintain
he's
mortgage.
Scraping change.
Yeah. And those cards,
those cards are all going to burn out.
Yeah.
They were all burnt out. He was getting denied on every card.
Yeah.
They'll end up all being gone.
All of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Which means he's maxed out. And if he has a checking account tied to one of his debit cards, his checking account has nothing in it. He's basically, and we're talking, this is what, the last week of the end of the month. He had a business shirt on, like from a business he worked for, and he had a work truck with that same business name on the side. So I don't know if it was his business personally or he was working for this company. But the point being was he had no money on him. And the cards he was using, his bank accounts were empty, his credit cards were maxed, and that's somebody in trouble. Mm-hmm. But you see it all the time. You go to any Walmart, which Walmart is your $70,000 a year and under crowd, right? And you go there towards the end of the month, I'd say now it's actually the second half of the month, the third and fourth weeks of the month. Them places are like ghost towns because and the people who are buying things have maybe a small little corner of a grocery basket. Like, you don't see the full grocery baskets. You don't see nobody buying any large ticket items like TVs, nothing expensive. You can go to any of the, you can walk by any of them registers, and I stop in the Walmart on and off, you know, during the week for certain things. And so I'm like, I'm coming in during different times of the day. So this is like a very good sample. Like, it's not like I'm coming in at a certain time every day. I'm coming in at different times of the day. So statistically, I should run into at least once a week, at least, somebody buying a TV or have a basket full of groceries or something like that. And you don't see that. You don't see it at all. And as a matter of fact, you'd be lucky if you see people buying right now they're just basically buying the bare necessities. And it's usually store brand, low cost, highly processed cancer foods, which is what's the cheapest, obviously. Yeah. And people that you would know that, and I'm seeing a lot of too, Jeff, is people that used to go would shop at a higher end stores are like in business suits and nice clothes, dressed nice, dressed properly, nice car coming into the parking lot. They're in there buying stuff at Walmart, but they're not buying a lot of things either. Which they are actually what I would consider the $250,000 a year, between the $75,000 and $250,000 a year crowd. It's right now, they said, I just read, this was on a mainstream financial website. Right now, Jeff, for the past year, less than one-third of the total American buying population or the consumer less than one-third of the total consumers in the United States have been carrying this economy. The bottom two-thirds have not. They've been losing. They've ran out of money. They're the ones who the subprime car loan market has had the highest rates of delinquencies and repos in history.
Where are these cars
that has been going on in the last 3 months? Oh, they're sitting over at the repo lots. You go to any. I have access to car dealer auctions, and I have access to what they call Manheim, CarMax, Odessa, Copart, and IAA. Now, Copart and IAA are what they call salvage auctions, right? Yeah. But cars that are damaged through repos usually end up in IAA or Copart auctions.
Are there good deals to be made? That's the question.
Not right now. No. And here's the problem. Why? They're overfilled with repos. Matter of fact, Wells Fargo and there's a couple other Ally and I think a couple other finance companies are paying premiums to get to the head of the line on repos. Because right now, repo companies are backlogged. Like, weeks backlogged. Like they don't have enough people to do repos. So if you, like I said before, if you're in and want to go into a growth industry, go into the repo business. Now it's dangerous, yes, but there's like, they got so much business, there's like, these guys are constantly working. Like they just nonstop. So you go into like all these different
$100,000 trucks, pickups.
Yeah. So you have, say, Wells Fargo. Just repo, say a 4x4, Ford Raptor, which them retail 2 or 3 years ago were going for about $145,000 off the lot.
Yeah.
A Ford Raptor F-150 pickup. It's got the, or you get a Dodge Durango with the Scat Pack, right? Or like a Dodge Challenger.
What is
with
a Durango?
Is that
the mid-size?
That's the full-size SUV, which is a sport, like an SUV. They have the Scat Packs or they have the Hellcats, which are basically really fast, 396 engines, really nice vehicles, but they were selling them for $100,000. They're still selling, in the car lots. You go to get the Dodge Challengers, the 24, 23 Dodge Challenger Hellcats. They're selling anywhere between $125,000 to $140,000. As soon as you drive off that lot, by the way, it depreciates by $30,000, $40,000, $50,000.
Got it.
The point is, banks at the time were not only given loans for the actual retail value, the ticket value, or the dealer manufacturer retail price, the MSRP. Yeah. They were given $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 above that because the dealerships at the time, since it was such a low inventories, they're putting on all these premiums. Like, they were just adding $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 to the value of the vehicle. So people were going in getting full loans. Like, some were getting 125 to 140 LTV car loans. And so now, 2 years later, they went in on these teaser rates for the first maybe 1 or 2 years, and then they got balloon payments. They can't afford them anymore. The value of their vehicle, they're calling up dealers left and right, saying, hey, can I sell you my vehicle back? But they owe way more than what the dealer's willing to give them. So they're basically upside down in their car loans. A lot of people are.
Got it.
So what goes on is they get repoed. The banks are running these cars through the auctions with, say, $125,000, $130,000 of principal on the books for some of these vehicles. Some of them is like $40,000, $50,000, $60,000. Well, here's what they're getting through the auction. Say they have a vehicle come through that has $50,000, $60,000 on the books in principal on the car loan, right? They run it through a lane, and the max they're getting an offer on is like $20,000. So the bank, what they do is usually when the auction, like say you say, okay, I bid 20, I'm the highest bidder, and it'll say on approval, bid. You winner on approval.
Right.
Meaning
right.
the the auction house is going to call the repo company, the finance company, said, hey, on this $50,000 vehicle you're trying to get, that's their minimum cap, because that's what the principal is, you're only offered $20,000. The bank says no. And the bank will keep running it through, trying to get the principal. They're not getting that, which is why slowly they're starting to accept car vehicles now at a lower price. What does that mean? Well, for a bank who's into the auto loan business, right? A lot of banks are. A lot of these finance houses are. If they were to take a bite or a loss on every vehicle, like $30,000, $40,000 loss, and put it on their books, that bank or that financial institution would collapse. It would be so, they can't show the losses. I think the same thing, by the way, Jeff, is going on in the housing market right now.
Interesting. There's something going on with housing that's not being talked about much.
No, this is pretty close to what happened in 07, right before, even in 08, 09, during the housing crash and during the financial crash. What they used to do, and I believe that was the reason why they allowed all these states to put very highly restrictive foreclosure rules at the time against banks, right? Because remember the stories were coming out, there's just robo foreclosing on people who current on their houses. Yes, that happened. Not very often. Because I know a guy who's in the foreclosure business who he's a guy who posts people's houses, right? That was less than 2%. Not even 2%. That was less than 1% of all transactions. But why did they put that out there? Because they knew their politicians that they own and the state legislators would all pass these laws, making it much harder to foreclose on a property. That provided banks cover to the stockholders. Because the fact of the matter was, if they were allowed at that time all the foreclosures to go through all at once in 08, 09, and 10, you could have bailed out the banks to kingdom come, and it wouldn't have made a difference. They would have all collapsed. That's why the Federal Reserve at the time with their QE came in and just bought toxic debt. And what the Federal Reserve managed to do was to basically, through Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, basically at one time own 80% of all holds. They were basically holding, I don't know what the current amount is on their books. They ain't going to tell you the truth. But at one time, Jeff, 80% of all notes on every residential property in this country was held by Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, all bought through the Federal Reserve QE program because they were buying toxic debt. All that toxic debt and all them, you know, the subprime bundles they were selling on the stock market, all of that debt was pretty much bought out and taken over by Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae, federal government through the QE program. And I think that's what's happening again, because they've made the same mistakes again. But this time, it's not because people were buying at one point buying houses they couldn't afford. They were actually buying houses they could afford. But when inflation went through the roof, and your mortgage is jumping every other month because your escrow account on your mortgage, which are two separate things, your principal and interest, right, where you pay,
right,
which is your basic payment. But what they don't tell you when you're buying a house is, okay, your monthly payment is going to be $1,000 a month P&I. Okay, that's principal and interest. But what about your escrow? Say you buy it through FHA. You have to have mortgage insurance. Then on top of that, your homeowner's policy insurance goes into what they call escrow. Your property tax goes into escrow. If you have special, they call them LIDs and SIDs, which are like investment districts, right? There's certain ones for new housing projects, new housing neighborhoods for roads and all these different things. They make agreements with the city. Let us build these houses here at an HOA, and, you know, we'll charge a fee to every homeowner for the roads to pay back the city for building the roads and maintaining sewage and all that.
Yeah,
so that gets into your escrow, and the HOA fees go into your escrow. The problem with that is, say, that adds an extra $300 a month on your payment when you first start out. So now your payment's $1,300 a month. A year later, your homeowner's policy is doubled. Now your payment goes from $1,300 up to $1,500. Then the HOA has to raise their fees because their insurance policies have all gone up. So the HOA passes all that expense on to the homeowners in an HOA. And next thing you know, the property taxes have been constantly going up. Then their utilities are going up. Next thing you know, their house payment went from $1,000 a month when they first signed the contracts. Now it's almost $2,000 a month. What's been going on in Florida, here in Nevada, and California, Texas, all these states, a lot of people are starting to not be able to afford their house, not because they couldn't afford the original mortgage payment. Even though they're at a low interest rate, doesn't matter. It's the added fees into their escrow account that's been adding every month, changing. I know this because I have a house payment. My house payment, Jeff, in the last 2 years has changed three times. Due to homeowner policies. Oh, no, it's gone up. And the reason why that is because I've had to switch three homeowner's policies three different times in 3 years. Not because I put claims in, not because I didn't pay the bill, because obviously I have to pay the bill because through my it's been automatically through the finance, you know, through my mortgage company doing it. What happened was these insurance companies have pulled out of the state of Nevada. They've pulled out. They just said, we're not. We're not renewing policies and we're not issuing new policies. We're pulling out. It's too much loss. And I don't know where they're losing money in Nevada, but I guess assuming maybe they're assuming the low levels of water of Lake Mead, maybe fire danger. I'm not sure. But California, they've had so many regulations onto the insurance companies. Just recently, State Farm, and I want to say it was either Allstate or another, I think it's State Farm and another company, two big major insurance companies, just basically threatened the state of California insurance commissioner.
I thought that was a huge story. It didn't seem to get much reporting. One day and it was gone. Well, but yeah.
Yep, either you let us raise by 30, 40% the rates or we're pulling out of the state.
That's true. Blackmail.
They can't lose money. It's beyond, you know, like you said, because, you know, the replacement cost for anything. Say, for instance, I've had an estimate for my roof. I had it 2 years ago, three years ago. I had an estimate on my
new roof. All new roof?
New roof replacement. Just, yeah, full replacement. Because I want to go to metal. I want to go to a metal roof. Full replacement back then was about $14,000. I just had a recent estimate done.
You can do that yourself, a steel roof. That's possible.
Sure.
It's not that hard.
But just, I'm just giving you, they gave me an estimate about $14,500, about 3.5 years ago.
That's actually not too
I just recently had one done, Jeff. Right now, it's $44,000.
Ah, see? Yeah, I figured. You're going to have to do it yourself.
So, yeah, but my point is, materials went up. The labor
not
cost
that
went
much.
Up.
It's just steel
the
sheeting.
The permit costs have went up. Everything.
Well, many of you listening out there need a major home improvement, like a roof, whatever, crack slabs. You've got problems.
Yeah.
How are you going to pay for that?
And exactly. So when these insurance companies who are, you know, insuring your home, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, that roof would have cost them, say, if I had problems, like a storm came in and blew half my roof off, probably been about $20,000 for a replacement. Now it's going to probably run them anywhere between $40,000 to $50,000.
Do you have insurance that will cover that? Were you damaged in that storm?
Enough to file
a claim?
But it's, unless you're, the only time, this is just a piece of advice to people, because I've learned my lessons on this over the years. The only time you want to claim anything on your homeowner's policy is if your house is literally completely 100% totaled out and destroyed. Why I say that is because I've had times where I put claims in for, like, roof damage. I had a pipe blow out, ruined my ceiling in certain rooms.
Right.
They filled the claim. Next thing you know, they're writing to you saying, we're canceling you.
Oh, count
because
on
then
that.
You're considered
I get the
too
point.
High of
no,
a
no, I've heard this story.
You're
before,
a high right. risk now because you put
yeah,
a claim
right.
in.
Right,
it might have only
right.
been a couple of $1,000 claim, but they don't matter to them.
Same with an automobile.
So you can't
yes. do a fender bender and file a claim. You'll lose your policy
no.
or they'll double it.
Yep, they double it. And then that's the other thing, too. They'll raise your rates
uh-huh.
high. And so you really want to treat any homeowner's policy, even a car policy, really as a catastrophic insurance. Because if you don't, you're going to be completely messed up. That's exactly what will happen.
Good advice. Very good advice. Yeah.
Yep. And it's the way it is. And so that's why so many people in Florida are having problems keeping their houses. Because in Florida, it's gotten really bad. I've heard, uh-huh. I've read reports, Jeff, and seen guys online who do these real estate, you know, YouTube videos who
yeah.
live in Florida saying that in some areas, the insurance rates have doubled and tripled. Like, people live in condos, in high-rise condos in, like,
mm-hmm.
South Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Their HOAs were charging, say, $1,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're trying to get $16,000 a month because their insurance have, like, gone up 1,000%. For the HOA to maintain the building.
Americans don't
building.
Understand most of what you just said. Most Americans don't. They don't have to face it, so they don't spend any time on it. Things are really bad. I'm telling you, it's all going to hell. It is. I don't want to say it. I hate it. But you've got to prepare as best as you can. It's going to go
well,
to hell.
Well, you do. It is. And like, for instance, if you no one's questioning, like, for in the commercial real estate market, for example, in the CRE, right now, buildings are losing 80 to 90% of their value being sold for an 80 to 90% loss.
Wow.
So, for instance, in San Francisco, I'll just give you San Francisco and Dallas, Texas. Two buildings, one in Dallas, one in San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
One sold, I think, in San Francisco for $350 million or around that range, about in 2016. Recently mm-hmm. sold for less than $20 million. Same thing in Dallas. There's one that was written down mm-hmm. to a $70, $80 million loss.
Yeah.
Who's eating the principal on these? These banks. Mm-hmm. Like, if a bank loans you $80 million and uh-huh. the ownership, by the way, commercial real estate, people understand, commercial real estate is refied either five or 10 years. And 10 years is very rare. 30 years is almost impossible. Most commercial loans have to be refinanced every
yeah.
5 years or every 3 to 5 years. Right now, most of these ownership groups are losing these buildings. The bank, say 5 years ago, loaned them, say $100 million. The bank sells it and loses $80 million. Well, that $80 million just didn't evaporate, right? It's on their books.
Right.
We're talking
right.
principal. It's not like they're losing just, you know, created interest rates or even that's a loss because, you know, that money's been out there. You know, it's being
it.
Used.
Yeah.
Not the fees, late fees or anything like that. Not only did they lose an $80 million, say they had a $100 million deal, they sold it for $20 million, they're losing $80 million in principal. How much did it cost for them to do the maintenance on the building while they're trying to sell it? How much did it cost the back taxes that the property ownership before probably owed? Maybe, say, a building owner who let the building go didn't do the maintenance for a year. And there was like multiple units in that building and multiple office spaces that needed electrical work done. Say in another couple, $3 or $4 million the bank had to put into the building to bring it back up to be to make it saleable, right?
Right.
Now they've lost $84 million on this. And it's one after another. Deutsche Bank today put a warning out. They are losing their shirt on commercial real estate. They're over leveraged.
What'd they say?
They're in trouble. They're in trouble. They don't have the reserves.
All right. Well, for them to go public with a statement like that, it's worse than that. That'd be my guess.
Oh, it is. Yeah, that's what they're trying. That's what they're telling you. But behind the scenes, it's probably a lot worse because in the next year, Jeff, 10% of all commercial real estate loans in the United States have to get refinanced.
Oh, my.
10%.
Wow. Good luck.
So what's that? Retail stores, factories, five-unit and above residentials, right? Office buildings, like malls, all that type of stuff. Anything commercial. Go around any retail, small retail strip store mall or strip, you know, like parking lots, you know, these where they have these 5 or 10 store little buildings where you go in in the parking lot and there's a storefront.
Yeah, yeah.
How many of them right now are up for lease? I go by some, Jeff, here in the
80-90%? Yeah, they're all empty.
Yeah, and I don't care what area of the country you're in. L.A.'s even worse. You go in downtown L.A., and, like, there's whole streets where every storefront says for lease. And you know them buildings are financed. And they're ran down. They're being graffiti. Homelesses are breaking in, starting fires in them. Good example is that high rise in downtown LA off Wilshire. They call it graffiti towers. And it's a half built towers. A Chinese company couldn't afford to keep. They lost it. It was given back to the finance company. Now, right now, it's a bunch of graffiti and they have no choice. What are they going to do with it? If they complete the building, there's no renters, because right now I think they said there's like a 40 to 50% delinquent a vacancy rate in downtown L.A., not including how many are out of that last 50% that are occupying office space in downtown L.A., how many are delinquent on their rent. We don't know that because they're not saying much on that. So you don't finish a tower like that because there's no one there to rent it when you're done building it. And so you have all these vacancies, all these owners who are coming up for refi. They're not going to refi. They're just going to walk away if they haven't already walked away. A lot of them are just giving it back to the bank. These banks are facing massive losses. Right. And here's the thing. So now we look and say, well, they'll just be bailed out again. No, they won't, because look at the U.S. government debt is like, what are they going to do, print more money, inflate it? That's the only thing they would do to try to bail out. But if you remember, what did our the man of the people, the homosexual queen Obama signed into law on a Friday night, like about a few months before he got out of office. He reversed the situation with the banking laws to where banks went from bailouts to bail-ins. And bail-ins are coming, and people have to really understand this. And what Obama did in the middle of the night on a Friday night while everyone was worried about their sports game, he basically said, if you have money on account in a bank, and if a bank's about to go under, they're just going to put a bunch of IOUs in your bank account and take and seize your accounts.
That's how they'll
do
it.
And only give you maybe and that's how what a bail-in is.
Right.
And they're basically going to come up and
maybe.
Yeah, if lucky. So what they'll do is, like, if most people, if they do banking, they say your balance, and then what they call available balance, right?
Yes.
And I always hate banks that have done this. Your balance is $10,000, but your available balance is only $2,000. So what do they do? A bail-in. Say you have $100,000 in your bank. They do a bank holiday because that's the first thing they're going to do. They're going to close all. They've already been beta testing this with people. Because how many times stories, Jeff, have we heard, Jeff, over the last year, have we heard about? The ATM network went down. No one was able to access their ATM money all weekend. The bank was closed. And people were mad, and they made it sound like it was computer issues. I don't believe that. What I think they were doing is beta testing to see what the human emotional reaction was going to be to it. Because when they could do a bail-in, and when a bank's about to go into collapse, they're not going to say a word to you. And I'm talking major banks, and when it's going to hit more than just one or two banks. We're talking multiple banks all around very close to each other, these dominoes will start going down. They'll start bail-ins. But what they'll do is a bank holiday and close the ATMs for the weekend. You won't have access. And then Monday morning, they'll reopen under a new LLC or new charter for the bank. But what they will do is when you go to your ATM and say, I want to pull out my money, it's going to say you have $100,000 on account, but your available balance is only $1,000. That $99,000 will become available once the bank can pay you back. Because we just did a bail-in. That's what's going to happen.
Because they will not be able to pay the balances, Joe. This will be, I hate to say this, I really do, this will probably be the last Christmas for many people. This will be it. And I grieve for all of those families out there who have loved ones who are now sick from the shots, sick from the virus. They're vax wounded, they're injured, they're home in many cases, or they're on a hospice somewhere. It's going to be a very difficult, difficult holiday season. It may be the last one. This is all coming down.
Oh, and I believe, Jeff, that this holiday season is not going to be good. Last year's wasn't that good.
Oh, no. No, this is going to be
terrible. Sales were down everywhere last year. Yeah. And last year, people still had credit left on their credit cards. I think what's been going on, too, they're doing it slowly. They're slowly rolling this out. I think the lower 30% of the American consumer have already been sent letters from credit card companies restricting their credit limits. So, like, say I get a credit card and the credit card company says, I'll give you a $1,000 credit limit. So I get my new credit card. 5 months later, that same credit card company is losing money. Well, right, and now I might have still that $1,000 credit limit still, right, available to me. They'll write a letter and say, well, we have to slash your credit limit in half and because you're too much of a risk, and now we've reduced your credit limit to $500. That's what's going on to a lot of people right now, especially people who are maxing their credit cards out or carrying a very high debt ratio on your credit. I would tell anyone with a credit card out in the audience, Jeff, and I used to do credit cleaning for as a side hustle for a very long time.
Right.
Credit card companies do, now AI makes it a lot easier for them, but every 60 to 90 days, depending on the credit card company, they do what they do, a credit sweep. So, and what they're looking for is they will now, say you have perfect credit and you get three credit cards. Now, in 3 months, you run into some problems. You have to run your credit cards a little bit too high. You're above, you know, banks, you know, credit card companies want you to be cumulative credit, right? So if I have three credit cards and all three credit card limits are, you add them together, say $5,000. They want to see a cumulative of you utilizing less than 10% of that credit. That means you're a low risk to them. Say they do a 90-day credit sweep, and you're running into a little bit of trouble. You got hours cut at your job, inflation still killing you, and you're having to rely on your credit cards more, but you aren't able to pay your balances down as fast as you used to be.
Bank
comes in, does a credit sweep. They said, whoa, this guy's got a 50% credit utilization right now. That's way too high.
Mm-hmm.
Say Visa from Wells Fargo, and you have a Visa from Capital One, from all these different. That one company, by the way, that will do that credit sweep will inform the other credit card companies from other companies, and will inform them that you're 50% utilization of total credit right now. And every credit card company will notice it. They write you a letter and say, we're restricting, or what they will tell you is, you've overutilized your credit. We have decided to not further do any business with you. We will now restrict your account. We have closed your account, and please pay the balance due. It happens all the time.
Are the bankruptcy courts busy now, Gary?
I think you're going to start and see a major ramp up here within the next year.
Right.
Because you're going to see a massive ramp up. Because COVID money has ran out. The the days of the stimulus checks, the money people save by sitting at home every day, shelter in place, and all that's gone. That money's been spent a long time ago. The savings is gone. The credit card limits of they're running high credit card debt. They're utilizing, say, right now probably carrying about an 50 to 80% balance on each credit card, which is very high. Mm-hmm. They're trying to milk the last 20% they have and baby it because they don't want to max their credit cards out because then they're in trouble. But the problem is they don't understand is that the credit card companies are doing sweeps and they're going to catch up to them and then shut their cards off anyway. Mm-hmm. And then once they get their credit cards shut off and say, well, you owe us a balance now, how many people are going to pay their credit cards when they get them shut off and told just pay the balance? Because guess what? That
nobody.
Balance, say the balance.
Virtually nobody.
Nobody. And let me explain how it works. So I cut your credit card off. Say I owe $7,000 on the balance. Your interest doesn't stop, by the way. Every month you carry that balance, interest is added to it.
21%.
You don't have a credit card anymore.
21%.
21%. Well, right now, Jeff, the good rate, people with good credit right now, credit card rates right now, 29%. That's what's good, excellent credit.
Oh, my. Yeah.
In my personal life.
You have a very unique overview of this whole thing,
yep.
And it's very helpful to hear it. Go ahead.
In my personal life, Jeff, I know people who have what was 800 and above credit. They have, they barely carry a 3% balance. I'm talking utilization. And they have five credit cards. They run a 3% just to keep the credit cards alive. Not because some credit card companies, if you don't use your credit card, they consider that a dead credit account. And they'll close your account too. So they maintain a 3%.
21 to 30% credit. Interest. 21 to 30% interest on credit.
So
I just can't believe it.
How they goad people into this, Jeff. First six to twelve months, 0% APR. Why they're doing that? Because if you're at 0% APR, if you don't use it right, you will run your credit cards up. Pay the minimums while I'm not paying interest right now, so I'll just run them up and I'll just pay the minimums, and I'm okay. Most people who get into these teaser rates, a year later, they have like a $50,000 balance or whatever their credit limit was given to them. They have like a very large amount of on their balance of their credit card. Then it goes from 0%. And then they said, wait a minute, you're using 80% utilization? Okay, well, now it's jumped to 31%. Now you're paying 31% interest on an 8 or 10 or whatever $1,000 balances you have. Then all of a sudden, you're saying, wait a minute, my balance went from 8,000 one month, now it's jumped to 8,800. Well, yeah, because you're now have 30% interest, which means like if you, for every $1,000, think about this, Jeff. For every $1,000 you float each month, it's a $300 interest on top of that. Because you're 30%.
It's just
30% interest on $1,000 is $300.
They've planned the destruction of our economy, our culture, our society.
It's illegal loan sharking.
Yeah.
A loan shark. Look, there's some subprime cards out there, Jeff. 50% interest. Subprime. And they're willing to take the risk.
Well, they're willing to take the risk on people. I have no credit cards.
But a 50% interest risk? No.
I have no credit cards. None. Never
so
have.
So this person I know, Jeff, who has this perfect credit, even them with the perfect credit score, no late payments, great credit mix, perfect pay record, long credit history, like the ideal credit person. Their interest rate is 27.5% on one card, 29% on another card, 30% on another card. And these are cards aren't subprime cards. These are like platinum cards. These are like excellent cards, like the people the best credit get. And that's the rates for them. What if I'm like a guy who has a low credit score who's trying to rebuild my credit? What if I get caught up in the rates 40, 50, 41, 44%, 45%? Think about that.
And remember, it compounds. It doesn't stop. It keeps growing.
It never stops.
Growing.
And then they owe late fees if you don't pay it. The late fees are added to the balance.
Yes.
So then say you owe $1,000, they owe $100
late fees
and the balance. Yeah. Because they're extending you credit with the they consider extending you. Think about how, what an insult. The late payments, like the late fees for not paying, they're gonna say, well, we're extending you credit. We're nice, we're letting you borrow the money for the late fees while we carry them on the books for you.
It's all evil. There's no way to reverse it. This was the plan of the 1913 Federal Reserve Act to indebt the country and then indebt the people and then take it all down. That's what they're doing. Sickening, truly. Gary, thank you for that. That was quite a little tour. We got a good look at it. It's all there. You got it. Thank you very much for that. Excellent.
You have a good evening, Jeff. Okay. Sorry we didn't get to the subject and the title of the interview too, but
yeah. All right.
It's good. Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
You too. All right. Good night. All right. Well, there's a man who understands the large and the small of the takedown that's underway. Not a pretty picture. We will be back with you tomorrow, Thursday. Be careful out there. Talk tomorrow.